accession number 26736, reel 4.
Albert Hughes, reel 4. So you were saying they showed you the gardens and
that's
also
right.
where vegetables could be.
Well, planted. That's right. So, of course, then I was more or less on my own. This civilian that came with this guard, I think he was something to do with the rations. You see, he had to make certain that the kitchen, you know, because the sitters themselves used to go up, you know, there. And anyway, and also, and then there was a down at the far end of the area, the factory area, there was this greenhouse. It was half buried, and there was a little compartment on the, as you went in the first door, and there was a firebox. So of course, but I mean, the winters after that first winter, they were never as cold as that first one. But anyway, I used to have to look after this greenhouse. Oh, sorry, am I moving?
No, you're wrong.
I'm not used to sat down so long.
Yeah, exactly. What did you have in the greenhouse? What plants?
Well, ageratum, geraniums, things like lobelia, loads of geraniums. And then, of course, in the autumn, I'd take cuttings. And over the top of this brick fire, I used to have a stoke from the outside. But as it came through with a big chimney through to the other end, and that heated the whole thing. But over the top of this brick fireplace, there was a bed of sand, you see, and you'd keep that damp. And then, of course, you could put these geranium cuttings and you know, let them dry off for 24 hours, and then you put them in. And then next to no time, they were forming roots with this warmth underneath. And then, of course, again with this ageratum, which is a small blue flower, I mean, you used to grow so many. You'd have so many in pots, and then you'd keep taking the little slips off and then putting them in this sand, and they would root in perhaps a couple of 3 days. And then, of course, you'd pot them off, ready for the spring to put in the window boxes around the factory.
So did people think you'd got quite a cushy
job? I think generally, yes. And I think I had.
Yeah, because in the winter... Reasonably warm.
Fun?
Reasonably warm.
Yes, and in the winter, I mean, you know, I didn't have a great lot to do. And a bit later on, we were getting books, and I used to read a book a day. If it wasn't a very big one, but I know on one occasion, The Sun something, there was a name of this book, it was quite a thick one, something like some of mine there, and you know, I think that took me more or less a week, but you know, I think I had quite a good job,
yeah.
Really.
Where did the books come from?
Through the Red Cross, mainly American, I believe, because I know there was one I read was The Robe. I forget now who that was written now, to be honest. But I know that was another one that I enjoyed. But I think they were mainly American.
Yeah. Some people were having a bit of a harder time in the factory than you.
I don't think. I don't think that they consider it a hard time. I mean, you know, for instance, there was a night shift on. You see, well, quite often, you see, the powers that be would have expected them to do, say, 4 wagons on their night shift. I forget now what it was, 4 or 6 or whatever, but they would. Well, of course, they would rush and do these 4 or 6 wagons, whatever it is, and then go and find a wagon and get their head down, have a sleep. And some went out and got connections outside. Because down near my greenhouse, there was this fence. You know, around about, that's 5 foot, something, 4 foot, something like that. And of course, they'd undone some of the palings, you know, they were separate palings. I'd undone some, which were movable, and then they would move them and get out. And they got some collections outside, either a girlfriend or something like that. But and then, of course, on one occasion, the Germans became aware of this, and we couldn't do anything about it, but there was an SS chap who was injured on the Russian front, and of course he was getting better, so of course they used to put those with us, you know, for guards, you know, until they were fit enough to go back to active service. And there was this one, and I got a feeling he may have been an SS trooper. And anyway, we, you know, there was two guards with us that had been there quite a long time, and they were quite, I wouldn't say friendly, but they come in and have a chat. And so anyway, they told us this particular time that these two guards, this one SS chap, were going down to see if they could catch some of these chaps going out. And sadly, as I say, they did. One was killed, and the other one, Taffy James, he got injured in the leg. But the other one was... And in the following day, there was a what we called a cement hut just up near the offices. And, of course, poor old... can't think of his name for a minute. They laid him down in this thing, and they formed us all up, and we'd got to go and see him, just more or less warn us, well, this is what happened to him, it'll happen to you if you don't toe the line. But of course, we turned that the other way, and we went up to the door, and attention, saluted, and out. And of course, the Germans thought, well, what they were trying to teach us a lesson. We sort of took out respect for one of our comrades. But anyway, that was that. So anyway, we were there until, well, the end of the war.
Did you have much contact with the local population, the Czechs?
Well, yes, because we were working with them.
Yeah, they were quite friendly, were they?
Well, really, yes. You know, I mean, well, just the same as if you were in an office and you had, you know, some your superiors with you. Well, I mean, you know, we used to work together. I did, as I say, I was mainly on my own. But there was one of our fellas, he got caught, Jim Locke. I hope he's still alive. He lives down near Salisbury. And he was working on the buffers at the entrance to the factory, and he got caught between two buffers. And anyway, and of course, eventually when he got repaired, they put him with me for light work. And I always remember him, he was quite a good scout, but he was terrible first thing in the morning. And he used to say to me, he said, if I meet you a dozen times in the barracks before we went... He said, don't take any notice. You know, normally I should say, morning, Jim. But no, what's good about it? And anyway, he always said, don't take any notice of me. And we used to march down, well, a quarter of an hour march down. And then when we broke up at the gate, we'd walk down to our greenhouse. And then I should then say, morning, Jim. And he was all right then, but... He was terrible. But anyway, you know.
Did you grow any vegetables outside? Or?
Oh, yes. Vegetables, beetroot, calabrese, that's that sort of looks like a cabbage plant, but it comes up.
Yeah, like broccoli. Sort of thing, but, yeah.
No, hard, like a turnip.
Oh, right.
That yes. Part of the way up. I don't think there's much grown in this country. But of course.
Celeriac. We call celeriac.
No, that's a celery root, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a root.
That's
yeah.
Right. I used to like celeriac, but I think possibly we grew that, I forget now. But that was the first time that I knew that we could transplant beetroot as young plants and then make a hole and put them, and they grew quite easily. And as a matter of fact, now, I mean, I've got some in the garden now, I do the self-same thing. I just put a short row of beetroot seed, and then when they get reasonably enough to handle, I pin them out, and that's something I learnt there.
And what happened to those vegetables?
Went into the kitchen.
Right.
Oh, yes. I mean, in the meantime, of course, when there was an order come through, I think possibly after we left her in Squetchen, there was an order come through that the prisoners had to have their potatoes cooked in jackets. Because, you see, where we were peeling them, there was a lot of potato went with the peel, as you know, to realise. But with cooking them in the jackets, you could take the skin and they were just wafer thin, like paper. And so, of course, there was no actually edible potato thrown away. Well, then we used to have those at lunchtime. And then, of course, we'd perhaps put two or three, in our haversack and take up and cook them at night or fry them up at night with a tin out of the Red Cross parcel. So, that was what the potatoes. But no, all the vegetables went into the kitchen. And of course, the German coleslaw. Well, that's what you call a big, what we used to call as youngsters, cow cabbage. And of course, that would be grown, and then they'd keep those in a cellar, and they'd keep going through the winter. But of course, with the coleslaw, they used to cut that up and put it into barrels. But as I say, all that. And then at Christmas time, as I say, they were very, very good. At Christmas time, I had to make miniature Christmas trees to go on the tables for when the civilians had their Christmas dinner. And that was, I used to get together a thin stick about that long, and then cut these small pieces of fir tree and put some wire around them, and then start them with small ones at the top, and then a bit later, about four layers of these small things. And then I used to have to put them out at night to get them frosted, and then take them in the morning and sprinkle over plaster of Paris. And of course, that where the frost had thawed out, and this plaster of Paris would stick on the fur, and then you would have snowy Christmas tree to go on the tables.
Lovely.
Yeah, quite interesting times.
What was Christmas like for you?
Well, much about the same. I mean, we used to have so many days off, but we didn't have anything special.
Did you manage to write home?
Oh, yes, we used to have two letters and I think two cards each month, you see, and then...
And did you get letters back?
Oh, yes. Yes, we used to, and then of course again, about every quarter, we perhaps have a clothing parcel through from home. But, we had, as I say, we did very, I still got one or two letters that were sent to me. I could have pulled them out, but I didn't think of things like that. I did bring that, but that's a report I did for my grandson.
Oh, yes.
In school, he had to make her.
Yeah.
But,
So, how did you hear that the war was coming to an end? Did you know before it ended that things...
Well, we used to... We knew just after the invasion on D-Day. We heard that more or less the same day, or the same evening, that they'd invaded. And, of course, then, from then on, shall be for home. But, of course, again... Well, of course, it went through that first winter, and oh dear, we're still here. Yes, we knew quite well. I think they, particularly the Czechs, you see, they would be listening to you know, some of the German news, and of course occasionally I think they may have got some of our news from the from this country. I don't know. But we used to hear it.
Did the Germans' attitude to you change as the war?
Not really. Not really. I think they were perhaps fed up with it. And of course, they were, to a certain extent, short of food. You see, they you know, I mean, quite often, you see, with we used to be able to swap perhaps a bar of chocolate out of their parcels and get a kilo of bread, which was £2, you know. And then, of course, some like my pal, he didn't smoke. So he used to be able to, you know, give us some cigarettes for some food of some sort. Oh, there was bargaining done. But, well, you know, we did, you know, reasonably well, really. And, well, anyway, when it got towards, as I say, this particular weekend, we knew that they were, you know, doing very well, the English troops going across the Rhine and this, that and the other. But then we, on this particular weekend, we went down. No, the night shift went off on the Saturday night down to work. And then actually, and then in about half an hour or so, they were back. And they said that the war was coming to an end. And
what
then,
did you feel then?
Well, I don't really know. You know, we didn't, well, I suppose to a certain extent we were excited. But, I you know, I mean, each year we always used to, when it got round to Christmas, oh, well, we should be home this time next year. You see, but I don't recollect really, well, I suppose we were excited. But, of course, as I say, some of us were still reasonably fit. I was. I mean, I know then. But, anyway, I don't know whether that was the Saturday night or Sunday night, but anyway, we were still there. The night shift didn't go off on the Sunday. No, Saturday night they went. They didn't go Sunday night. So the next day they would have gone on the Monday night. But, of course, it didn't. And then, there was these flats up above this theatre, and there was somebody up there lent us a wireless. And we heard, on the Tuesday, we heard Churchill's speech, you see. And then on the Wednesday morning, we were going to leave. And of course, all outside in the streets were all white flags hanging out the bedroom windows, this, that, and the other. Because I said most of the people around there were Czech, but still, it didn't make any difference. And then we left with two of these, as I say, these old established guards came with us, and we went through the Russian lines and through the German lines, and then through the Russians again. You know, when we say lines, I mean, they weren't, well, as I said before, they weren't like trenches of lines. There was gaps that we got through. And then we waited to a certain extent, and he was hoping to get transport to carry us on through. Well, there was three of us. I forget who the third was. There was myself, a Scots chap, named Jock Hanley. And we started walking on our own. And, you know, we felt reasonably. And anyway, we come across this lorry with a couple of Germans in. And I don't know how it happened, but we took this lorry off them. And they come and sat in the back. And this Jock Hanley was driving. And I know the gear lever of this lorry was round back here. And anyway, we drove through to this Czech town, and I forget now the name of that. And I don't know what happened to these two Germans. But we got to this, and then, of course, eventually the others joined us, and we kept that lorry. But the next day we filled it up with, because, as I say, there was originally only two of us, we filled it up with more of our chaps. And then, of course, there was two or three more lorries with the rest of the men. And we drove through to Prague, and they were still fighting in Prague. But I always remember there was a guard, and he was over three or four ladies, and they were ripping up the cobbles. They were, you know, granite. They formed a lot of the road, and they were having to pull them up and build barriers, you know, in this in Prague. Yep. And then, of course, we went on through to Pilsen, where it was the Skoda Works at Pilsen, which were made armament for the Czechs originally. And there we caught up with the Americans. And then, of course, we lost our lorry there. And then the next day, the Americans in their lorries, they took us through to Pilsen, took us through to, can't think for a minute, it was the Messerschmitt factory were there. And of course, all this week, you see, we slept under the stars, you know, just on the bare field. It was wonderful weather.
Yeah. And you were with the Americans?
And yes. Well, the Americans took us.
Pardon? What did you think of them? Well,
I don't know whether we. Well, we didn't take much notice. They were our allies, and that was that, you see. But they didn't, you know, they didn't treat us more or less, say, you lucky people, fancy meeting us. I mean, I suppose some of the other fellas come up, but this was the American section. And we went through to this, there was a Messerschmitt factory. Anyway, the next morning, we had to line up, and there was the American Dakotas. Come. No, I mean, the first time I went on an airplane, but it was no different to stepping on a London bus. You know, we were quite pleased to be getting, and we flew with the American Dakotas to Brussels. Now, that was on a Saturday night, and of course, we left on the Wednesday morning, so that was Thursday, Friday, and that was Saturday night. And I know, stood up in these lorries, my leg was swelling up, and so I went and saw the MO in Brussels on the Saturday night. That's right. And I said to him, I said, I've got so far, and I said, I don't want to stop now. But I said, what can I do about this, you see? So he said, well, go back to your billets, because we were in, hotels or something like that. And he said, get your towel, put it in cold water and wrap your leg in this cold water compress, which took the swelling down. And then, of course, on the next morning, the Sunday morning, we went to the aerodrome and we got on to British Dakotas. And they took us through to Wing in Cambridge.
Right.
Cambridge. And, as I say, that was the Sunday. Well, I know we went and found, I don't know what we did for money, I'm sure. Well, of course, quite possible. We may have had a little bit of English money still. I don't know. But we went and found a little pub and had a drink.
Really?
And,
How thin were you then?
Well, no, I was back then to more or less my 12 and a half stone.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But of course, I'd had 3 years, you see, of Red Cross parcels and, you know, a certain amount of German bread and their sausage.
Mm.
But no, we were more or less, most of us were back to normal by then.
So were you fit? Did your leg have to have any treatment?
Well, you see, that took it down. Well, then, as I say, naturally, you know, after that, I mean, you know, it was stood up in these lorries with the, you know, Dirk and I presume that had done it. And as I say, then on the Monday we were documented, fixed up with new uniforms and this, that and the other, sent a telegram off to our next of kin, which would be parents. And then you know, for the fact that I should be home on the Tuesday. And also I went and rung my old shop as I was managing, and the old gentleman was still there that I engaged. He was managing it because all the young professors were away. And I remember the telephone number, so I rung him up, and Mr. Saunders his name was, and I said to him, you know, where will you go down to 39 Barclay? The shop was in Barclay Parade, Cranford. Barclay Avenue went down, and 39 was where my young lady lived. We were engaged in 19. After I joined the army, we became engaged. And so I presume she was still with me, if you understand. And so I said that I said, tell her that I'll pick her up tomorrow, and we'll go down to Stanway. And so anyway, we went and got on this, on the railway at Amersham, I believe. And then I drove down to Paddington. No, it wouldn't have been Paddington. St. Pancras, I think. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And then, as I said, I got on the Underground and went down to Hounslow West and then through. And funny enough, when I was on the train on the Underground, one of their shop inspectors, because we had a branch at Hounslow East, and then you've got Hounslow East, Hounslow Central, Hounslow West, and he got on the train. Turvey, his name was. Of course, he was thrilled to see me. And my old Diggs lady, she was a John Lyons waitress, you know, years ago. And she was doing the waitress in a pub, the Earl Haig, outside Hounslow West Station. And, of course, I went in and saw her, which she was thrilled to see me again. And then I went on through to Cranford, down to where... And I always remember when... I think Joan's mother opened the door, and Joan was two or three steps up the stairs, you know, because the stairs went up the side of the... And, you know, I suppose she wondered what the devil I should look like. But anyway, then we had lunch, and then I went and caught the 4:20, I think it was 4:20, it was the same time as it was before the war, train from Paddington down to the West Country. And we used to have to advise the guard at Morton in Marsh to stop the train at Toddington. And then, of course, I walked, you know, a mile from Toddington up to Stanway.
Were you quite a hero when
you got very much, well...
Because, you know, they hadn't known whether they'd lost you, had they, really? I mean,
pardon?
They hadn't known whether you'd come back, really.
Well, see, I sent the telegram off on the Monday down to home that I should be home on the Tuesday. Mother apparently was... I don't know whether they delivered the telegram the same Monday or Tuesday morning, but Mother apparently had gone into Cheltenham, and they were scratching around Cheltenham to try and, you know, find her. And then, whilst the war was on, the... Gentry, the Earl of Weems, etc. I know when he died, but I don't know now. No, he was still there. No, he wasn't. They moved to Scotland. And the mansion was taken over by a London secretarial college. You see? And anyway, these girls, there are some of them, had gone up and decorated the house, and then a placard over the door. You must excuse me, I get a bit.
That's all right.
Welcome home, Bert.
That lovely.
Was very good.
Yeah.
But there you are. That was my homecoming. Well, then, of course,
I'll just stop you there. Robert Hughes, end of reel 4.